Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Habsburg Empire, A New History, by Peter M. Judson. Narrated by Michael Page. Introduction. On Tuesday the 13th and Monday the 19th of June, 1911, in villages, towns and cities across Imperial Austria, over 4.5 million voters turned out to elect a new parliament. Campaigns in individual constituencies were hard-fought, and party agitators did their best up until the very last minute to rally their voters. From Vorarlberg to Bukovina, Prague to Dubrovnik, party rallies, bombastic programs, endless pamphlets, even clever satires, dominated public space in the weeks leading up to the election. Party newspapers urged readers who had not already done so to hurry to the local government office with official identification documents. Here they could pick up their voter identification cards, Legitimation in German, which they should keep handy after they voted in case their district held a runoff election. All warned against last-minute chicanery devised by their opponents. Christian social newspapers in Graz and Linz implored campaign workers to continue campaigning in every street and neighborhood of every district until voting ended. In Chernowitz, Chernautz, Chernivtsi, the bourgeois German, Romanian, Ukrainian and Polish nationalist parties rallied their communities to unseat a socialist incumbent. In Petau, Ptuj, the Slovene language Stajerts exhorted its readers as voters, farmers, workers and craftsmen, urging them to unity behind its favoured candidates in South Styria. Prognosticators and candidates like to exaggerate the political stakes in any election. In retrospect, the stakes of this election in 1911 may not have been exceptional, but the level of excitement expressed in regional newspapers as well as the high turnout rate on election day appear to reflect a high level of significance attributed by individual voters to the act of voting. One social democratic newspaper captured the essence of this significance, proclaiming, "When you cast your ballot in the urn, you decide your own future." As Austrians swarmed to their polling places to decide their own futures, they were well aware that they were also determining the future of their empire. Some of them even paid the ultimate price for their determination to vote, as shocked newspaper readers across the monarchy learned on 20 June, the day after the end of the voting. An election day massacre had taken place the day before in the Galician oil town of Drohobych. A crowd of Jewish and Ruthenian or Ukrainian-speaking Galicians gathered in the town square, determined to exercise their right to vote at the end of a bitterly contested parliamentary campaign. Many worried with good reason that the local authorities would try to fix the outcome in favour of incumbent Nathan Löwenstein and prevent them from voting for their candidate, Zionist Gershon Zipper. The former was the candidate of the town's Jewish power brokers and of the conservative elites of the Polish club, who effectively ruled the crownland of Galicia. For this election, the town bosses set up a single polling station to accommodate close to 8,000 potential voters. During the day, the local police prevented anyone but known Löwenstein supporters from entering to vote. Several times, mounted police drove restless crowds away from the voting station. Instead of doing their expected brisk sales from the presence of a festive crowd of voters, local shop owners experienced broken windows and collateral damage from the increasingly frustrated mob. Then, in the afternoon, the town bosses encouraged troops brought in from the Rzeszów garrison near the fortress at Przemyśl to fire on the crowd. 26 people died immediately, including women, the elderly, and children. Investigators later determined that most of the dead had been shot in the back, suggesting that they had been fleeing the troops. This dramatically disturbing story does not simply illustrate the lengths that local political authorities were willing to go to maintain their power in an age of mass voter mobilization. It can also be read as a sign of the sheer intensity with which people in an industrial town far from Vienna and Budapest engaged politically and emotionally with their empire. This was only the second election held since the adoption of universal manhood suffrage for Parliament in 1907, and only the third since the enfranchisement of men without property in 1897. Precisely for these reasons, people treated the hard-fought right to vote as critical to their lives. Elections in the Crown Land of Galicia generally had a reputation for corruption at the time. The inhabitants of Drohobych knew well that the men who ran their town would devise every possible form of chicanery to control the outcome of the poll. Nevertheless, an ethnically, religiously, and linguistically diverse crowd of working-class people was determined to elect its agreed-upon candidate. Zionists and Ruthene peasants may seem like unlikely allies, especially since we are used to hearing about conflict in imperial Austria that pitted national or religious groups against each other. Both groups, however, cared deeply about this election to the parliament in faraway Vienna, even though this institution had much less influence over their daily lives than did the Galician government in Lemberg, Lvov, Lviv, and the local bosses who represented that regime. Why were the stakes so high, in both symbolic and real terms, for everyone in Drohobych that day? What does this tell us about the place of the Habsburg Empire and its institutions in people's lives? For many Austrians, the empire constituted an alternative source of symbolic and real power that might not outweigh the power of local elites, but could at least temper it. When Zionist and Ruthene political leaders complained to the Ministry of Interior in Vienna about local corrupt electoral practices, for example, they did receive some legal redress, even if Vienna could not fully rectify the fundamental unfairness of local political conditions. On 19 June, the crowd in Drohobych used its imperial right to vote as a point of leverage, however small, against the people it perceived to be its local oppressors. Parliamentary elections held immense cultural and social significance to people across the empire. Resident men over the age of 23 may have been the only ones officially entitled to vote in these elections, but the presence of women and children among the casualties at Drohobych testifies to the degree to which empire concerned everyone on that day, not simply the enfranchised and not simply the powerful. Franchise restrictions did little to prevent women, youths, and even children from participating in this political, cultural, civic, and often celebratory ritual that brought thousands of people together, connecting their community to the rest of the empire. An examination of the boisterous events of June 1911 in villages and towns across Imperial Austria would reveal similar socially, religiously, and often linguistically diverse groups of people asserting their voices, often in unexpected alliances, to construct the future of their empire. The same was often true in the Hungarian half of the dual monarchy, despite the narrow franchise that limited the electorate there. Nevertheless, by the 1890s, crowds of the unenfranchised in Hungary often mobilized to support a particular position or candidate on election day, even though they could not vote. On election day, the empire functioned for all of them as a screen on which to project their beliefs, values, hopes, frustrations, and, above all, their visions for the future. Election day constituted a critical ritual of empire in which people of all social classes shared. People held common expectations of the election process as well, expectations that officials would guarantee their fairness and legality, expectations that the authorities in Drohobych so egregiously and tragically violated. This book is about how countless local societies across Central Europe engaged with the Habsburg dynasty's efforts to build a unified and unifying imperial state from the 18th century until the First World War. It investigates how imperial institutions, administrative practices, and cultural programs helped to shape local society in every region of the empire, from the late 18th century until the first decades of the 20th century. It also examines how citizens in every corner of the empire engaged with these various practices and institutions, often appropriating them for their own purposes or reinterpreting them to fit their interests. Taken as a whole, these complex processes of empire building gave citizens in every corner of the empire collective experiences that crossed linguistic, confessional, and regional divides. The violence at Drohobych in 1911 is only one of countless examples that demonstrate how an approach to imperial history from the point of view of shared institutions, practices, and cultures challenges and rewrites the nation-based narratives to which students of the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?